WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
The key is that we're a very resilient people. We don't just fold and collapse because we have a hard time.
Jamaicans are praying as they experience one of the strongest Atlantic hurricanes ever. It's Tuesday, October 28th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Shiko Theuri. Today on the show, Democratic and Republican mayors urge the Trump administration to prevent food assistance benefits from running dry this weekend.
It's going to be a very difficult environment for people who are stretching budgets and making trade-offs just to get food on the table.
And today, air traffic controllers are missing their first full paycheck because of the government shutdown.
You know, we've been through this before. The longer it goes, the worse it gets.
But first, Jamaica is experiencing what the World Meteorological Organization describes as the storm of the century. Jamaicans have endured hurricanes before, but Hurricane Melissa is the first Category 5 storm to ever hit the island. Chris Elliott, who lives near the capital of Kingston, described it to NBC Washington this way.
For a Category 5 to make landfall, it's something unprecedented from where I stand.
NPR's Eder Peralta is following the story from Mexico City, and he spoke to Peter O'Dowd late Tuesday morning.
I think the headline here is that this is a monster storm. And that's not, it's not an overstatement. The National Hurricane Center says that its maximum sustained winds are 185 miles per hour. And a Hurricane Hunter plane just measured its central pressure at 892 millibars. And the lower the pressure, the stronger the storm. And just six other Atlantic storms have had a pressure under 900 millibars. So what's clear is that Hurricane Melissa will go down in history. I mean, the only thing that compares in Jamaica is Hurricane Gilbert, which made landfall as a Category 4 in 1988. But this is just an absolute monster of a storm that's about to pummel Jamaica.
And that would certainly explain why the prime minister has said that he has been on his knees in prayer as the storm approaches the island, and that no infrastructure in the area could survive this Category 5 storm. What are the concerns about the damage it could do?
I mean, look, the National Hurricane Center says we should expect catastrophic damage in Jamaica. I mean, you know, these winds are just incredibly strong. I think the only thing, the only sort of good news that we have is that it will glance Kingston, Jamaica, which is the biggest city in the country. But, you know, the whole western part of Jamaica is going to be in the eye of this storm, and we should expect just massive amounts of damage. I mean, meteorologists compare it to, you know, just a huge tornado moving through the center part of this country.
Well, and a lot of rain, Eder, is that right? In this very mountainous country.
That's right. Landslides are possible. And also, we're looking at a, you know, the National Hurricane Center says a 13-foot storm surge. So that's a huge worry, because as these storms move in, they push an enormous amount of water inland. And what the Jamaican government has said is that very few people have heeded their evacuation orders. A lot of their shelters are basically empty, they're saying. And so they're worried about what is going to happen to the people who did not leave. You know, what happens when all this water pushes in? So in the next few hours, they're going to be facing just incredibly dangerous conditions.
Eder, it may be hard to know at this point why people would not be heeding the evacuation orders, but do you have any clues?
You know, our producer in Kingston has been talking to people out and about, and I think what we've heard is they say, we're used to this. We're used to riding out storms, but the government was telling them, don't mess with this storm. This is a different storm. This is a massive storm. We actually haven't seen anything like this in Jamaica in, you know, recent memory. But I think a lot of Jamaicans are used to tropical storms, and they think they can ride it out. I mean, one woman, you know, just a few hours ago told our producer, you know, we're just going to sit here and pray, and we think everything will be okay.
Hmm. Jamaica is a fairly small island country. Cuba is right next door. Just briefly, what's next?
That's right. It's expected the forecast track takes it out of Jamaica, and it will still be a major storm. It'll weaken somewhat as it goes through Jamaica, but it's going to hit the eastern part of Cuba near Guantanamo Bay. That's what it's forecast to do. I mean, again, luckily, this storm, this massive, awful storm, is staying away from the huge population centers, but it's still expected to cause a lot of damage.
U.S. service members at Guantanamo Bay, are they still there?
They've been evacuating. And in fact, one of the interesting things that's happened here is the U.S. has a big deployment in the Caribbean. They've been shooting down those alleged drug boats, or what they say are boats carrying drugs. Right. And they have moved from those waters into ports.
NPR international correspondent Eder Peralta in Mexico City reporting on Hurricane Melissa that is bearing down on Jamaica. Eder, thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
Coming up next, SNAP benefits are set to end for tens of millions of Americans. Stay with us. More than 40 million Americans rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program to put food on the table. But this weekend, that program is expected to run out of money because of the government shutdown. More than two dozen Democratic attorneys general and governors are now suing the Trump administration over the suspension of SNAP benefits. And mayors from both sides of the aisle are worried about their constituents. Among them is Matt Turk. He's the Democratic mayor of Allentown, Pennsylvania. He's also the chair of the Children, Health, and Human Services Committee at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And he tells Peter O'Dowd about 30,000 people in his city will lose their SNAP benefits.
And in Allentown, just as in Pennsylvania and across the country, people who are counting on additional support to put food on the table and keep their kids fed and keep their families from going hungry are going to lose benefits, and they're going to have to make difficult trade-off decisions to make sure that everybody stays fed.
Allentown is a working-class city. What are you hearing from people about how they're preparing for this?
I mean, people are already struggling. Rent is on the rise. People are worried about prices at grocery stores and at the gas pump, and people in Allentown and people in other cities across the country and in rural parts of the country are going to have to make tough decisions about doing basic healthcare visits or buying food for their families. And that's incredibly challenging. And the most difficult part is that it's not just the impact on families, but a program like SNAP has widespread economic impacts on cities. These impact local retailers, grocery stores, farmers markets. A lot of the SNAP transactions occur there. So it has ripple effects in our cities.
Oh, because they get the revenue from people from SNAP benefits when they come in and spend the money.
Yeah, and I spoke with a grocer in Allentown. He's concerned, but like many neighborhood grocers, he's going to figure out a way to support the families that shop in his store, and it'll be incredibly challenging.
You wrote a letter recently urging the Ag Secretary, Brooke Rollins, to tap into a $5 billion contingency fund that would keep those SNAP benefits going. Have you heard anything back from the administration about whether they plan to do that?
No response. We haven't heard response from the administration. We know that the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities has clearly articulated how the USDA can tap into contingency funds. They have about $6 billion in reserves as the estimate. They can tap into funds to make sure that SNAP benefits are getting to states. We want to make sure there's no disruption, and the administration has the power to do it.
There are Republicans in Congress who want that emergency fund to get used, although the Trump administration says they can't legally do it because it has to be because of some unforeseen emergency like a natural disaster that would allow them to tap into it. So, I mean, what are you hearing from Republican mayors about this? I know you've been meeting recently.
Yeah, I was recently with mayors of places like Oklahoma City and Columbia, South Carolina, and Findlay, Ohio. And those are all cities that are led by Republicans, and they're equally concerned. And those are, you know, also red states. with Republican senators and Republican congresspeople. I'm represented in Allentown by a Republican in the House, and Republican mayors, Democratic mayors, independent member mayors. We're united in our concern about the impact that a disruption to SNAP will have on our communities. We're a nonpartisan group for the most part. We're focused on leading our cities, and our concern is on the impact on families who just want to send their kids to school, ready to learn, and continue to contribute to the American economy. They need to be fed to do that.
If this shutdown does continue into next month, what are you most concerned about?
I'm concerned about the families in Allentown and in cities across the country. This is a supplemental nutrition program. I'm a kid that had food stamps myself as a young person. I wouldn't be where I am right now without the food stamps, without my free lunch card. I remember it vividly. I have a huge concern for our food banks, who right now provide one meal for every 9 SNAP meals. If the food pantries have to step up, they're not equipped to replace all of those SNAP meals. So this is going to have wide-ranging effects in cities and in states. And mayors will find out a way to meet the needs of their communities, but it's going to be a very difficult environment for people who are just looking forward to, you know, things like Thanksgiving and Christmas. We want to make sure there's a present under the tree for our kids. It's hard to do that when you're stretching budgets and making trade-offs just to get food on the table.
Matt Turk is a Democrat mayor of Allentown, Pennsylvania, also chair of the Children, Health, and Human Services Committee at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Mr. Turk, thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity to talk with you. Have a great day.
Coming up, air traffic controllers aren't getting paid today for the first time since the government shutdown began. So what does that mean for safety? We hear from a pilot after the break. Today, air traffic controllers are missing their first full paycheck because of the government shutdown, but they have to continue working without pay. And many are calling in sick, leading to flight disruptions across the country from Dallas to LA. And some controllers are now taking second jobs. Jack Chris is an air traffic control specialist at Joint Base Andrews. He told MSNBC that he's now driving for DoorDash.
I didn't have a choice at the time. I have to do what I have to do in order to provide for my child.
Captain Dennis Tazier is a pilot for American Airlines. He's also spokesperson for the Allied Pilots Association, a pilot union for American. And he started his conversation with Peter by saying he's deeply alarmed that his colleagues are under immense stress.
It enrages me. This is unnecessary. But this is actually, when we run that through the safety culture model, that's someone, and that's a behavior that degrades the safety margin, because, you know, we're at a crossroads of a human event here. When it comes to airline safety and security, let alone reliability, when I have someone, and that Jack Chris, the air traffic controller, well, hopefully one day I'll meet him and shake his hand. Thank you for being so honest, because disclosure of that stress is what keeps my crew safe, and therefore our passengers safe. And that air traffic controller and every single one of those other ones out there doing the great work that they're doing right now under that stress, you're messing with my crew. And I know that that fight, that political fight, is trying to invade my airplane and get into my cockpit. So
has the stress made its way into your cockpit?
Well, it has, because now I know what it's like for human beings, like that air traffic controller and many others, who aren't saying anything, saying, well, I'm just going to get through this. I know that they have the pressure on them. So when we are flying in the skies near the speed of sound, I have to consider that air traffic controller has a lot of other things going on that he or she should not have going on in their life. And the catalyst for that is this government shutdown. You know, we've been through this before. The longer it goes, the worse it gets. But our union, along with other unions, have said, look, we understand the politics, but enough's enough. Vote for the clean CR so that we can move airplanes safely, securely, and reliably.
The Trump administration has discouraged air traffic controllers from taking second jobs. I guess my question to you is, have you heard of other people doing this? Do you know how widespread it might be?
Well, I'm sure that whatever the rate that's measured, you can multiply it by a factor or two, because someone being as honest as that air traffic controller was, he had the courage to bring it up and say it. But there are many others that through just personal pride say, yeah, I'm doing the same, but I don't want to talk about it. And, you know, the Trump administration saying, hey, we encourage you to not take second jobs. That's a righteous call because they know it's a distractive feature. These air traffic controllers are working 6-day runs with 10-hour shifts. We know they're understaffed already. To put that on air, you know, you've got somebody that's gotten used to carrying 200 pounds above their head, and now you dump another 200 on there. You know, something's going to start to crack.
Well, that's why I think the fundamental question here at its core is whether or not when people get on an airplane in the United States, as long as the government is shut down, is it safe to fly?
It's safe to fly because we don't fly the airplane unless it's safe. But when you have an infrastructure under artificial pressure like this, we also are adult enough and professionals enough to know the analysis that you're undermining the foundation. And as the political waters wash away at the foundation, we're going to start seeing fissure cracks. And that's what we're keeping our head up and eyes open for.
There's already a shortage of about 3,000 air traffic controllers across the country. It's a tough job. It's stressful. Do you think this shutdown and the attention that comes with it makes the recruitment effort even harder in the future?
Well, that's a great point. You know, we have that issue on the pilot side as well, ensuring that the next generation, young folks now in their 20s, make a decision to take on these types of professions, which are rewarding, which are very noble causes. But just like with the pilot profession, and it's to a certain degree air traffic controller profession, it's like anything else. When your kid looks at something and goes, well, that looks like a great profession, but it's unstable. It has dips and dives. I'm not treated with some level of humane treatment, duty of care. People start to make a different choice. And that's another longer term problem. But anything that you're doing to undermine the short term, midterm, and long term viability of the airline system will eventually land in your backyard.
Dennis Tager is a pilot for American Airlines, also spokesperson for the Allied Pilots Association. Dennis, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
And one more story before we go. People experiencing homelessness often have trouble receiving mail, but 7,000 of them are able to get letters and packages through a Phoenix-based group called Keys to Change.
It's super important because people who are experiencing homelessness often don't have the usual forms of identification. It's a good thing also because they can receive their packages. One person I met there received a sweater because, you know, he knows that the weather is getting a little bit cooler. Another person received some shoes for a new job. So it's really useful for people.
But as the Trump administration cuts funding for housing services, the future of that program is in jeopardy. You can find that story and hear more on our website, hereandnow.org. Here and Now Anytime comes from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Sam Rafelson, Lynn Menegon, and Jill Ryan. Today's editors were Micaela Rodriguez and Michael Scotto. Technical direction from Caleb Green and Andre Peralta. Our theme music is by Mike Moschetto, Max Liebman, and Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. And the executive producer of Here and Now is Alan Price. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.